Yes, my old showman. Hello?
Yes, we're ready to begin.
Okay. Now, today's shiur is mostly on the Megillah, or the Hilchos Megillah, Hilchos Purim. And the first thing I want to begin is with the Mishnah in Megillah. Mehechon Koren as a Megillah. We have to read a Megillah on the day of Purim, and later on it was added the night of Purim. Originally it was only in the daytime. Esther and Mordechai were misaken, they read the Megillah in the daytime. Like all mitzvahs are done in the day by us. We have nothing to hide. Shefer in the day, and Elulav in the day, and Tzitzis until day. The most miserable day. But anyway, that way is the night. Now the question is, the Hechon Koren of Megillah, what part of Megillah do we have to read? Now, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yesi in the Mishnah, and Rabbi Shimon in the Baraisa. Four Tanoim. Now, let us begin with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda begins with Ish Yehuda Hoya B'Shushan Abira, that it is the first mention of Mordechai in the Megillah. Ish Yehuda Hoya B'Shushan Abira, and there's a Mordechai. Ish Yemini, a man of Binyamin. Here it calls an Ish Yehudi, the Gemara asks. Ish Yehudi and Ish Yemini. And the Gemara says he was both. His mother was from Yehuda, but his father was from Binyamin. And it's interesting, it gives you a thumbnail history that actually, originally there was all the 12 tribes were in Eretz Yisrael. So Yud Bei Shvatim, 12 children of Yankov Avinu. And each one became a Shevet. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, and so on. Now, what happened was, after the death of Shlomo HaMelech, he was the king of Alta, then the Malchus divided. There was a Malchus Yisrael, led by Yehavid Yosef, Ephraim, and Menashe later, and Shevet, and Malchus Yehuda. Malchus Yehuda was Yehuda himself, the biggest of all the tribes, and the second tribe with Yehuda was, of course, Binyamin. Binyamin had a history of always going with Yehuda, because traditionally he had never forgotten that Yehuda had to place himself in danger in Mitzrayim before Yosef, and therefore Binyamin was always loyal to Yehuda. Binyamin told Yehuda, and fortunately that was so, because the Shevet Binyamin was always the Beis HaMikdash, Yerushalayim and the Mikdash, and therefore Yehuda was in a good position, because the other Shvatim didn't have the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. However, Binyamin and Yehuda were. So Shevet Yehuda and Binyamin, they are the two Shvatim, and Binyamin, Mordechai of Shevet Binyamin is, of course, the main architect, I would say, of the mitzvahs of Purim, and begin with the Nisim of Purim. He was the one, he and Esther, together they decided, the Sanei Sora and the Yankov, that Achashverosh and Haman had decided to Lahasmid Lahalakzvahudim, and therefore they decided to have a fast day of 3 days, and that was the downfall of Haman. As everybody knows, kids are mice. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says as that only the history we may retain, talking about Mordechai and Shevet Binyamin, that you have to read up for him. But the rest of the story of Ahasuerus, and that, of course, he wanted Vashti, his queen, to come before him, that's not, has no shaykhus with the rest of them. Those are the shita from one time, from Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Achar advorim ra'ele yidah ha'melech es homon." According to Rabbi Yehuda, we must emphasize not the whole reading, but the reading pertaining to the Rosh Haman himself. That Haman had the vicious idea, the Hasmid Lager Ha'udim, and the Rebbeinu Shalom sent a major nest, that we celebrate for all times. And the pasuk at the end of the mid of the Megillah says, "V'nei Purim ha'ele le'yavro mitecha Yehudim, v'zichron le'yosof mizarom." So one Amira says, it will always be a Purim, because the Pera says, "V'nei Purim ha'ele le'yavro mitecha Yehudim." However, the other Amira says, you must emphasize the second half. Tesis understands also that the second half of the Pasuk is the most important. V'zichrom le'yosof mizarom, that the zecher of Purim, the remembrance of the events of Purim, that will never disappear from the Zera Yankif, from the children of Yankif, the children of Yehuda, and so on. So the Tesis says, because the first half of the pasuk, "V'nei Purim ha'ele le'yavro mitecha Yehudim," only refers to that generation that lived through that time of Purim. The people that lived through, they can never forget it. I mean, as an example, people had gone through the Holocaust in Europe during the Nazi period can never forget it. They can be 100, they will never forget it. And actually, even people who were in America or in England, even though they didn't go through the Holocaust, also they cannot forget those terrible events. So therefore, the Zichron le'Yosef Mizarom is a guarantee for the permanence of the Nisim of Purim, which will always be remembered and taught. Now, the third Tana is, of course, not mentioned in the Mishnah, but the first Baraisa, Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon says, "Balayla hu noritos asamah." It's not important to read all about the godless of Mordechai, even about the riches of Haman, and incidentally, Ahasuerus, who said to Haman, "Hakesef nosun loch, don't have to offer me any 10,000 pieces of silver. I was just happy to get rid of the Jews, and therefore you can take them and not give me a penny." Yes, so Ahasuerus also wasn't allowed. And Chazal emphasized this. Chazal say, "Achashverus melech hafach b'koyo." Achashverus was a melech, and he could always be a mafachbach. You do one thing today, do the opposite tomorrow. And first of all, because he was angry at Vashti, his wife, and who was the one who incited him in Mukhon, v'mukhal zehomon, so horag ishte v'pnei ahavoi. Because of v'mukhal, because of homon, he went and had his own wife, Vashti, one of the most beautiful women, that she was eliminated from him. And that was a Melech HaLachbach. And then he turned around when Esther, the later queen, when she comes and she begs him, Abrachmanis, right? He goes and turns around and has Haman hung. What did Chazal want to tell us? The godless of the Ness of Purim, that Achashverosh originally was not a Eir Yisrael, but because of the Ness of Purim, because Hashem implanted him this idea, Hofach, he turned around and became a supporter of Mordechai and Esther and so on. That is what they mean, Melech HaShvachah. Okay, so Reb Shimon said, we don't have to look for a Sibus. We'd like before, Reb Yehuda says, that it tells us the godless of Mordechai. Reb Yossi tells us the godless, that the riches of Haman took to Reb Shimon. You don't have to tell Reb Yossi what to do. He knows what to do. Balayla, when the time came for a miracle, it was the second night of Pesach, the middle of the fasting period that Mordechai and Esther had decreed for the Jews in Shushan. And just then, it was decided, it's enough of this. Balayla hu nadnos nas a melech nas melech shel olam kav yochel rabbeinu shel olam in the shamayim the malachim, they're all upset, what's going to happen, how can you allow that to happen? So you don't need no excuses. The rabbeinu shel olam, he is the one who runs the world. That's the shita for Reb Shimon. And now to get back to what we could have started with the sheet of Reb Meir. The first one mentioned, Reb Meir said, Shetzorich Likreis is Kula. It's not enough to read at one part of the Megillah, how important it may be, how essential, and how vital to the whole. But to know that you must read the whole Megillah, the whole Megillah Esther, you must read from beginning to end. Why? Because from the beginning, it seemed innocent. There was a 12-year period between the beginning and the end, or even more. And at the end of beginning of that period, and over there that took place a great feast. What was that feast celebrating? That, according to the calculations of Achashverosh, that the Jews would never get out of that Golus of Babel. And therefore, there was cause for celebration. Achashverosh recognized the qualities of the Jew. That one, a very important element. They can bring a lot of success to the country in which they live. United States, Baruch Hashem, had been very successful with many, many Jews moving in the last century or more. And the Goyim Dona too. And Achashverosh knew it. And also the story with Queen Achashverosh, Queen Vashti, the Queen of Achashverosh. Vayhi b'mei Achashverosh. And then Achashverosh, in the middle of the party, he decides that to bring his wife Vashti publicly, and to show all the nations what a beautiful wife he has. And of course, Vashti was she was not impressed by that. Vashti said to Ahasuerus a few choice words, he said, She said, "You are a stable boy. You don't believe in the company of a melech and so on, royal company. After all, I am Belshazzar's daughter, a granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, he himself was the head of the whole civilized world. Shleishim Malchus B'Kippa, Akov, Nebuchadnezzar, and Achashverosh. They were Malchus B'Kippa. They were king, ruler over the entire civilized world in their time. Tesis Agifrekta Kasha, why does the Gemara mention Alexander Mugdan, Alexander the Great? He was also after Achashverosh, and the Greeks took it over, and the leadership for a while. So Tesis says, the only Gemara mentions the things that are found in Tanakh. Alexander, he was, of course, a great man too, and a great lover of the Jews. When he saw Shimon HaTzadik, the king Gottel came to meet him, he went off his horse and bowed down to it. And the people exclaimed, "To this old gentleman with a beard, a Jew, you go down?" He says, "When I see him in my dream, I know I am going to win the battle." In other words, he recognized the superiority of the king Gottel, Shimon HaTzadik. Right. But actually, he was a separate character. Anyway, getting back, so Achashverosh Molach B'Kippa, he was the king of the entire civilized world. And therefore, Belshazzar, his grandson, and Belshazzar's daughter, Vashti, when she married Achashverosh, that's the ladder that became so great, and that is what Vashti implied, that he sent a messenger, Sarisim, people who had been castrated, people who were sterilized, they shouldn't have any sexual feeling for her. They were afraid that they might have hanky-panky with Vashti. Vashti said to him, "Will you send to Vashti Amalko?" "No, but Moin Amalko Vashti. I was Amalko before you knew me as Vashti. And what business do you have now to insult me with such an offer to come and to show everybody how great I am, how beautiful, with she should appear in nothing else except the crown of diamonds? That is an insult to me." That was what Vashti answered. And of course, what happened was that there was a hesitation on the part of Ahasuerus. What should he do? He was very angry, but he can't tell everybody what she sent to him. That would be a bizarre. They would laugh at him. They would make comedians out of him. But so he said, "I must find out when this happens." Because the Jewish Chachamim, they know exactly the timing of a certain decree, the timing of a certain law. And of course, the Chachamim were very cautious. They did not want to tell them what they think he should do, because they knew that tomorrow, after Vashti was taken care of and eliminated, then Achashverosh would, of course, he would come out of his stupor, out of his drunken state, and he would say, "What happened to Vashti?" And they would tell him, and he would be angry, he would be vicious against them, And so therefore they said, we can, since we're out of Eretz Yisrael, we do not have the seichel to judge it. And then came Haman, Memuchan, the Haman, and Memuchan said, Lo ala melech levada. This is not a private matter between the king and Vashti. This is a public matter of the government of Poras and Modai is going to be told by one woman what to do against the wishes of her husband? No, sir. From now on, a thing like this will be judged not by a court, by the king Ahasuerus himself. And that, incidentally, that turned out to be the downfall of Haman, who authored this idea that the king, because then when Ahasuerus got angry at Haman, he said, Lualov, go hang him. I don't need the advice of a court. I can do it myself. Lualov. And they hung Haman, took the demon, hung it, and that was the end of it. So Haman drove, like you say, he dug his own grave. So therefore, the mail says that you see every event from beginning to end. There was one purpose, one theme. The nisim that the Bein Shalom does very quietly, sometimes silently, nobody knows it, but afterwards you realize there was a pattern of nisim. So in contrast with the nisim of Mitzrayim, when the Jews, of course, were taken out of Mitzrayim, which was a great nisim, but there it was b'derech nes. Everybody saw it, and everybody saw the Kriyas Yom Suf, and everybody knew what happened with Mitzrayim. But over here, just the opposite. Everything was hidden b'derech hateva. And that's why that is, in a sense, it's a follow-up to Tzias Mitzrayim. Tzias Mitzrayim, there were great miracles openly, but over here in Poras Umodai, in the Hasheris, there were great miracles, all of them hidden away in the Teva. It's only after you realize and you study, you see there was a pattern and there was a theme that the Rabbeinu Shalom wanted to do great mitzvah for Klal Yisrael. Okay. So much for the introduction and the machlekes and the Mishnah. So we have the sheet of Rav Meir, the whole thing, and that is the halacha, incidentally. The later Amaroyan is paskin like Rav Meir, and then there's the sheet of Rav Yehuda, that the emphasis is on Mosai, who came from Yehuda, and the sheet of Rabbi Yossi, and then the Talmud adds the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, that Rabbi Shimon said, Now, I want to say, of course, one of the major factors, perhaps even the major factor, what brought on the anger and the fury of Haman against Mordechai? O Mordechai lo yichrav lo yiftachave. Like Kamalezo, that remember that Haman had been rewarded when they caught these two fellows who wanted to assassinate the king. Ahasuerus, Big Son of Seres, they wanted to poison him. and And like a good citizen, when Mordechai, who knew the language that they were speaking, all languages, he was in the Bezdin Sanhedrin, he had to have a knowledge, a working knowledge of all the languages, and he heard them discussing this. He was a loyal citizen of the government. The first thing he did, he told Esther that she should warn the king, and he put up an investigating committee. Vayivukash Abdullah Vayimotzei, and they investigated, and it's like a troll that these two chelev, Bixen and Seles, they want to. So Mordechai, is, of course, is a loyal citizen to the government of Ahasuerus, went ahead and saved the king's life, and instead of rewarding Mordechai, this, can you imagine who did he decide to reward? Decided to reward Haman. Because Haman had been the one got rid of Vashti, and because of Haman he has a new queen, and this new queen, and through Mordechai telling her, she saved his life. So he owes something to Haman. And Haman became the vice chairman, I would say. He became the second in charge of the whole government of Ahasuerus. The right-hand man of Ahasuerus. And what was it? Everybody was supposed to see Haman and to bow down in front of him. O Mordechai lo yichav leishtachver. Included in the instruction that everybody, all the servants and all the ministers should all bow down to Haman, but the Mordechai, he's exempt. Well, Mordechai, that is lo yichav leishtachver. Of course, Mordechai said, I'm exempt. Then when they asked Mordechai, the people, they saw everybody's bows down, with the exception of one man, Mordechai. And they said to Mordechai, why don't you know? And Mordechai could have answered, I'm exempt. Mordechai didn't say that. Mordechai said, I'm a Jew. I don't bow to Yehudiyu. I'm a Jew. I don't bow down to anybody else, only to Hashem, only to God. And they told this to Haman, Vayimoli Haman Chema. And Haman became full of rage. He was angry. He was livid with rage. And he goes, I must get even with Mordechai. And what did he do? He sat down at a local bar with Ahasuerus, and they plotted against killing not only Mordechai, killing all the Jews, the people of Mordechai. I'm Mordechai. Everybody. Everybody. When Taf and Noshim, women and children, everybody. Eliminated the whole Jewish nation, which was fantastic. Mordechai was so upset, he tore his clothing, and he communicated with Eliyahu HaNavi in the Shemayim. Eliyahu HaNavi told him it's a vicious exam and we should do something about it. Now the question is, if it was such a risk, why does Mordechai insist? Because the Gemara says actually that sometimes that a person is allowed to in the face at least, to worship worship idol worship, right? And how come Mordechai didn't do it? So actually, Tesis says in Sanhedrin, either Samach Aleph, Samach Beis. So Tesis says, because Haman had a tselem, a cross, on his clothing, and Mordechai could not bow to it. But then that only doesn't answer the question. Mordechai wasn't the only former Yid in Shushan HaBira. There must have been other Fumiyin. How come they were allowed to bow, not him? The answer is found in the Yehudeya. There are more Yehudeya, Simon Kufnan Aleph, I think it's Kufnan Aleph, and he says that when a Jew walking along back in Russia and Poland, and he encounters a priest, and a priest is carrying a cross, Christian cross, is he allowed to bow down? That was a general rule in those countries. And the Ramon says there are two opinions. The major opinion is he's allowed to bow down because he is not essentially bowing to the cross, to the Avodah Zarah, but he is giving honor to the man who has the privilege of carrying the cross, human being. So you're allowed to bow down to a human being. It's only to a Avodah Zarah. So therefore, everybody else was allowed. But then the question is, why does Mordechai not allowed? It tells us Mordechai was the owner, the master. There was a time when Mordechai and Haman had both gone on an adventure, I would call it, a war, a battle against some of the enemies of Ahasuerus, and they were the generals, and Haman ran out of supplies. He's starving, the men are starving. So he came running to Mordechai. Mordechai, of course, was a bigger supplier, and he was careful. So Mordechai made him his promise he would be a servant, an Eved Kanani of Mordechai. A person doesn't bow down to his own servant. Therefore, everybody else was allowed to bow down except Mordechai. So much for the reason why Haman is so vicious, why he's so full of anger against the Klal Yisrael. And of course, they had a zeit, and this was in Pesach, and they put out a date. 11 months from now, in order, 13 days in order. But we celebrate today as Tainus Esther, because the Jews, when that day finally arrived, although the situation had changed very much, and Mordechai is not a prime minister, and everybody is on his side, nevertheless, it's still a dangerous time. And 13 days in order, that was a major battle where the Jews had to then defend themselves against all the goyim in all the nations and all the provinces and all the states. And fortunately, the Gentiles, the non-Jews, they had lost their courage. They were afraid of the Jews. Instead of think that they are superior, they are afraid of them. And they're afraid of the Prime Minister Mordechai. He is second to Ahasuerus. And of course, they did not put any resistance. When the Jews went ahead and they searched out all the Amalekim, their vicious enemies, and they killed, it's reported in the Megillah, 75,000 Amalekim were killed by the Jews in self-defense. But the Jews offered no resistance. The Goyim offered no resistance. No resistance. Now one Jew lost his life. So it was a major... it's not like in Hanukkah, you know. In Hanukkah, although there was a great victory, but unfortunately many of the Hashanoim, the Kohanim who led the battle, you know, Yehuda Maccabi and others, they fell never in battle. Yehuda Maccabi and his brothers, Eliezer was crushed, if I remember, by an elephant, and so on. There was a big loss of life. Here, in the Knesset of Purim, not a single Jew lost his life. And on the contrary, they were able to eliminate 75,000 Amalekim in one day. In one day. Hello?
Yes.
Now let's continue, all right?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, let's continue. Everyone, please mute your phone.
All right. Now, so we're up to the battle on the 13th of Adar. Remember that Haman had now been hung, because in 1 minute, when he was lost when they said that Esther said, "Here is a man so vicious, he thinks of killing all the Jews." In the presence of the king Ahasuerus and his queen Esther, he was lost. He was scared. He didn't know what to say. His book of excuses wasn't sufficient. He didn't have what to say. And then, of course, Chavona, one of the assistants to the king, or one of the aides, you would call him, he came along and he said, "Just look through the window and you'll see a tremendous gallows." Now, who put it up? Haman. He was planning to assassinate Mordechai and hang him here. So the Melech said, "That's a good idea. Go hang Haman." And they turned around, they hung Haman, without even thinking. And that's the end. That was a turning point. Then, of course, Esther came back and she said, "That's not enough. Never mind, we eliminated Haman." But Haman had sent a series of letters, he called them, to all the governors in 127 provinces in which he outlined a plan for killing every Jew, man, woman, and child. Now, what's going to bat with that? So Ahasuerus said, "I'm giving you and Mordechai the power to defend yourselves." So Mordechai sent out a series of letters 70 days later, when the original messengers had come back already. And they had delivered the first message. So Mordechai sent out a second message. And signed by the authority of the king. The king gave him his signet ring. He gave him his tabas, his signet ring he gave him. It showed that he could sign things, you know, in wax and so on. And the second series of letters dictated by Mordechai was that the Jews have the right to defend themselves. The government of Ahasuerus given that right. They given them right. And then along came 13th day of Adar, and there was a major battle, but it was a one-sided battle. The Jews, as I said, they had murdered 75,000 Amalekim, bitter enemies of Israel, and not a single Jew lost his life. When Esther heard this, when the king said to her, "You know what happened? I'll give you a report." Esther said, "That's all very good, but all I ask you is now one simple thing, that this same battle of defense should be extended for not for the whole kingdom, just for the Jews of Shushan, the Jews in the capital, or actually not in Shushan HaBira. Shushan HaBira is the capital city. Shushan is what we call, like in Russia, they have the Kremlin. The Kremlin is a seat of government. That was Shushan itself. Shushan itself had transferred from Bovo, the previous Malachim, the previous king, all of them operated from Bovo, Babylon. But then Ahasuerus changed it to Shushan. And that was the capital city of Persia, what we call Iran today. And there was also a government complex similar to the Kremlin in Moscow. And that was also called Shushan. Not Shushan Abira, just Shushan. And that's where she said, give the people of Shushan Abira, they should be given a special privilege to show that the king had changed his mind completely. And never mind he sent out the first letters. The second constitution that he has, this is not a Torah of exile, not a written message, but an oral message. Orally, he told Esther, go ahead and tell the Jews in Shushan Abira they should continue to kill more of their enemies. So in the first day, in Shushan Abira, they had killed 500 Amalekim. In the second day, that's the 14th day of Adar, they killed another 300. And Vabizo Leshochos Yodav. They didn't take any property. They're not interested in acquiring property goods. Just become rich. They don't need that. They want to have freedom. That's all. That's all they need. And Ahasuerus, he gives fine. So that's why Purim today is celebrated not by one day, but by 2 days. One day is celebrated in the whole world. That in Yilshim this Friday. I'm sorry. Next Friday, a week from Friday, we'll read the Megillah here. And, of course, we'll have a Seder on Friday, a big feast. And in Shushan, which is, of course, the next day has to be Shabbos. Shabbos, you don't read no Megillah. So Shushan must also, if there are any Jews living in Jerusalem, which is the same had a wall just like Shushan. So Jerusalem also, they will read the Megillah on Friday this year, because on Shabbos they can't read the Megillah. So usually they would read it the day after that. In Moshe, Purim is Tuesday. So we read it on Tuesday. Jerusalem reads it on Wednesday. But this year, since the second day will be Shabbos, they also must read it. But then there is a problem. The Gemara says that you don't need a minyan to read the Megillah. You don't need a minyan. If there is no minyan, there's only 5 people in a little town, and they have a Megillah, and they read the Megillah. They don't need a minyan. Usually, whenever we have we daven shachris or musaf or mincha, must have a minyan. Take 10 people, 10 Jews of bar mitzvah at least. Oh, that is only a double speaker. The Megillah was not part of Kriyas HaTorah, so therefore you can read the Megillah even as one person by himself. Biyochid. But that has a provision only if you read it when it's on the time. If it is not the time, because they used to read the Megillah on the days before Purim. If Purim be on Tuesday, you can already read the Megillah on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. Why? Because people had to go to markets, and it's a whole explanation. But anyway, but if you read the Megillah without the regular day, you must have a minyan. Megillah b'zmano is biyotid. Shalei b'zmano, you need a minyan. Now, there's a question in halacha. Reading the Megillah in Yerushalayim, and when they read it this year, the same day as we read it, on Friday, next Friday, a week from this Friday, is that a bismano or shalei bismano? Do you need a minyan, or you can read it even biyochid? We don't have that problem. We can read it biyochid. This is the zmana by us, here in America or in England or whatever. And in Israel, like Sakhir Shalayim. But in Yerushalayim itself, where they usually read it the day after, that's a problem. What happens this year? So Gamesha Sternbuch, one of the Ziknei Yerushalayim, one of the elders of Yerushalayim, Baruch Hashem, Zayin Gesund, Gamesha Sternbuch, he has a special kutras, a special brochure on the laws of Megillah and the laws of Purim in Yerushalayim, the old city. And he says that's Mekubal, it's accepted for Ziknei Yerushalayim. It's a lot of the elders that they say you can read it even by yourself without a minyan because it has a status. It's been pushed off from Shabbos to Friday, but it has a status of a bismana. That is what the relationship is made. So there you have your answer. Now I want to tell this. I think is the final. The final closing of the discussion today. A very important discussion. Esther came to Ahasuerus and she said to him that on the 13th day of Adar, they killed 75,000 and there's all thanks to you, Ahasuerus. You were so benevolent, you gave us the right to protect ourselves. Fine. We thank you profusely for that. I ask of you another favor, please. And she begged him, please give her the opportunity not only to celebrate the 13th day of Adar, what we call Tainus Esther, but also the 14th day in Yerushalayim, it should have a status of Shushan. They should be given an extra day. What was the purpose of Esther that there should be an extra day in the city of Yerushalayim? Why was it insufficient, the fact that in every community, every state in the 127 states in the civilized world, every capital, every little town, the Jews have been given the right to self-defense and they should be able to take care of their enemies, the Amalekim, and they did that. What was necessary, they should have an extra day. Now, I'm not giving you a complete answer. I'm giving you homework. Try to figure it out between now and Purim. What was the purpose of Esther asking you for an extra day? And Ahasuerus agreed to it. And, of course, Esther probably was with the full advice of Mordechai. He was the prime minister. He probably went along with. What was their advice? It seems they had another motive in mind. They wanted to make sure that people would realize this is not a gesture from Achashverosh which can be revised and changed. This is something given orally. He cannot change it. Once you give something orally, how in the world can you change it? That, it seems, is the reason. The Vilna Gaon has a discussion which I have not been able yet to completely analyze. But I'm giving you time from now to Purim. That's another, what is today, about another 9 days, I think. And try and figure out with yourselves and the former Folsom and the Megillus Esther, Malbin and others, what purpose was there? Why did Esther insist that a special exception would be made with the city of Jerusalem and Shushan, of course, that not only the 13th day of Adar should be celebrated, Tainus Esther, but also the 14th day, and therefore in Jerusalem they don't celebrate on the 14th. They do it on the 15th. This year, because the 14th will be Shabbos, so they were fed. Where did they find this? Okay, I think we'll stop here. If we have any questions, we have a few minutes left. Yes?
Now, why did Mordechai wait 70 days to send out the next Igros?
Oh, that's a good question. I indicated it. I'll tell you. They waited for the Shluchim to come back. The messengers, you know, they didn't go by El Al. They went by donkey. Oh, Ramochim. Ramochim, according to Rashi somewhere, 8-footed camels, special camels, 8-footed camels, they probably could travel twice as fast. So instead of going at 2 miles an hour, they go 4 miles an hour. Okay. Okay, any other questions, please? No? Well, thank you again, everybody. Next week, we'll have to decide we'll have a session or not. So believe that, or maybe the next session will be in 2 weeks. We can begin learning the din of pace already. All right?
Thank you very much.
You're certainly welcome, all of you. Thank you for coming. Thank you.
Okay.